the beat goes on. The beat goes on.
The drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La da 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 dee. La da 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 da.
The grocery store, the supermarket. Still keep on marching off to war.
Electrically they keep a baseball score.
And the beat goes on. The beat goes on.
So you spin to the right, then spin to the right, then spin to the right again. Then you spin clockwise, spin to the starboard, spin to the right, and then you move a little bit abrupter. You're our nation's finest.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of union members are expected to turn out for a St. Louis rally today supporting nurses striking St. John's Medical Center. St. John's nurses on the picket lines in the strike against the medical center are fighting a battle over issues like patient care and staffing that many nurses nationwide are also dealing with. Julie Gunther of Nurses United in Kansas City joined the St. Louis nurses on the cold picket line.
We know that the situation for registered nurses across our state and country is really dire as far as staffing conditions and quality nurse retention. And we just wanted to come and show our solidarity and support for them. We know they're advocating for their patients, and that's what registered nurses are all about.
St. Louis's organized labor community is coming together in support of the striking nurses. Today's rally will include the Greater St. Louis Labor Council, St. Louis Building and Construction Trades, Missouri AFL-CIO, and Teamsters Joint Council 13.
We're out on the picket lines. It's really cold, but they've got, it seems to be extremely well organized. They've got several barrels with fires going in them. There's like six strike points all around the perimeter of the hospital, and the community's coming by and honking and waving, and we've got firefighters out here, Teamsters out here, Missouri State AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer's out here.
5 months of tense negotiations between UFCW grocery workers in Northern California and three major grocery chains came to an end on Sunday. 19,000 union members had threatened to strike at Safeway, Albertsons, and Ralph's grocery stores if a new contract could not be reached by midnight Sunday. The new tentative agreement does not include employee-paid premiums for healthcare benefits or a two-tier wage and benefit structure, two items the union fought against successfully.
More than a million workers in southern India's fishing industry began a strike last week. The workers, who anchored more than 6,000 fishing vessels along the southern coast of the country, are demanding fuel subsidies and a ban on fishing by foreign firms. The fishers, represented by India's Fishing Boat Operators Association, blamed foreign companies for a substantial decline in their daily catch over the last 2 years. The association says that locals can't compete with the technology equipped on the foreign vessels, giving them an unfair advantage. India has also seen a decline in exports ever since the United States placed duties on shrimp imports. The U.S. was India's second largest shrimp buyer.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers are increasingly obese. A study in the December Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine finds that 29% of workers in the U.S. are obese. Obesity can add the equivalent of 20 years in age in terms of increased cardiovascular risks and decreased productivity. It's a substantial 9% increase over a similar study done 10 years ago. Increases were also found in the rate of high cholesterol and diabetes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yachts.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com. One thing we learned from the recent unpleasantness, otherwise known as the presidential election, is that folks in the red states live lives centered around family values that are stronger and fundamentally more moral than the liberal lifestyles of those blue state people in, say, Massachusetts, right? The political pundits insist that this regional morality gap explains George W.'s red state victory and has altered American politics for the foreseeable future. Democrats, they say, are hopelessly out of touch with the deep family values practiced by born-again Christians in the South and Midwestern heartland. Interesting if true, but quick, name the state with the lowest divorce rate in the nation. It's the very state that Bush, the Pat Robertson-style political preachers, and others on the ultra-right constantly denounce as the absolute nadir of decadent liberalism, Massachusetts. Its divorce rate is barely half that of Georgia's home state of Texas, for example. Nor is Massachusetts some sort of statistical anomaly. The region with the lowest rate of family breakups in America is the Northeast, including such blue-blue states as New York, New Jersey, Maine, and lefty-crunchy Vermont. The highest rates are, in of all places, the Bible Belt, where you still see billboards piously proclaiming, "The family that prays together stays together." George Barna, a born-again Christian and the head of a research group that does surveys among faith groups, finds that only 19% of Northeasterners have divorced, compared to 27% of Southerners and Midwesterners. Barna's surveys also revealed another surprise. The divorce rate among conservative Christians is much higher than for other faith groups. 27% of born-again Christians have been divorced, as opposed to 24% of other Christians, and, holy, only 21% of atheists and agnostics. This is Jim Hightower saying, maybe the pundits should just quit trying to color-code America.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add them to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, what a day we're going to have. Welcome, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the home of reality-based radio. Yes, your radio reality show, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. Today, actually, I'll be doing 7 hours, 3 hours here on my program, and then I'll be filling in for Randy Rhodes on Air America Radio from 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Should be an interesting day. We'll be doing the same Monday and Wednesday of next week, just as an FYI. Very pleased to do it. It's a real honor. So anyhow, welcome to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. If you'd like to call in, the number for our program, 1-866-889-8894. The chat room you can get to by going to TomHartman.com and clicking on Live Chat. It'll drop you into the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And, of course, there's also a message board there. I want to get into one of the questions. Have the Republicans cut a deal with the devil? Have the Republicans cut a deal with Satan? I mean, this is a serious. And we're going to hear from, indirectly, actually, a major credentialed conservative, Christian conservative, on this issue in this first hour. And I think it's a very important one. In the second hour of the program, we're going to get into the myth of national victimhood, all wrapped up and delivered for Christmas. And in the third hour, back to what's going on with the economy. What can we expect? What's going to happen? What What are these guys up to? What are the Bushies up to? Where are we going? Before I get into that, though, I got an interesting note. Yeah, those of you who listen to commercial radio, you know that if you want to support a program that you like, that you appreciate, that you listen to, the most effective way to do so is to contact the sponsors. And for that matter, if there's a show you don't like, the most effective way to do so is to tell the sponsors. The radio stations love to hear from you, of course, and nothing wrong with that. But it's the sponsors who pay the bill. And I got an interesting email from Veronique Raskin, whose voice you hear on this program every hour. Veronique and her brother Michel, who's by the way, a medical doctor, he's an MD, started this the organic wine company 25 years ago, I think, they started it, to sell in the United States organic wine made in their family vineyard in France. And now they import all kinds of French organic wines. And she sent me this note. She said, "We notice a stronger and stronger trend from your callers since the election. They really come out and say that they call us because they want to support us, the people who want to support, who support Tom, you know, the Tom Hartman program, so we can continue to sponsor the Tom Hartman program, so he can continue to sponsor, to support us, and so on and so forth, if you see what I mean. It is a nice feeling for us," she said. "They are really coming out of a place of, quote, what can I do to help? Absolutely got to do something, pull my weight, make a difference," end quote. This, she says, is good. I agree. I think it's marvelous. And I encourage you to support, you know, not just the sponsors of this program, and particularly the local sponsors on whatever radio program, whatever radio station you may be listening on, but of any kind of progressive programming. And, of course, ChooseTheBlue.com. is the website of the day. It's a website that lists, you can go through just about any category, and you can find the companies that made significant, really substantial donations to the Democratic Party, or the Republican Party, if that's what you're looking for. And make your Christmas shopping, or holiday shopping, or just general, you know, somebody's birthday, or whatever you're getting, you have to buy something for that, whatever, you can do it appropriate to that, if you wish. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson on January 16th, 1787. This would have been when he was living in France, I would guess, when he was the U.S. envoy to France. This was during the administration of John, 87. No, this was the year that the Constitutional Convention was worked out and was to be ratified. This was before Washington was even made president. And we were operating under the Articles of Confederation. And Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to Colonel Edward Carrington, wrote, our quote for the day, "Experience declares that man is the only animal which devours his own kind. For I can apply no milder term to the general prey of the rich upon the poor." Speaking of the rich, and our question of the Republicans cut a deal with the devil, the Reverend Pat Robertson, who owns a racehorse but says gambling is a sin, who owns Freedom Gold, a gold mine in Liberia in which he cut a deal where Charles Taylor owns 10% of the company. Charles Taylor, as Congressman Ed Royce described him, Charles Taylor has waged a continuous assault on the democratic dreams of the Liberian people. He rules by decree. He suppresses the press. He sanctions, if not directs, the murder of political opponents. He and his so-called inner circle control virtually all the nation's significant trade. Liberia has been described as Charles Taylor Incorporated. This corporation is corrupt to its core. And a piece of it is Pat Robertson, apparently. Or was. I'm assuming, well, I don't know if he still owns the stock or not. I know he did a year or so ago. Regarding China's policy, Pat Robertson, he's an ardent foe of abortion here in the United States. This gets to this question that is sometimes raised, and it's interesting. Very few people ever call this program to say this out loud, but I get emails from these folks. And occasionally there's a discussion on the chat board, on the message board. I get emails from these folks who say that the reason why they're opposed to abortion is that most of the people who have abortions in the United States are Caucasian, and they're concerned that
people whose skin is darker than Caucasians are multiplying at faster rates, and Caucasians are going to end up minorities in the states. And so that's the basis of their opposition to abortion. No, I'm serious. There are a lot of people who this is, you know, basically a blatant call to racism is the basis of their opposition to abortion. And here we hear Pat Robertson on CNN talking about China's policy of forcing abortion. And he says, well, you know, I don't agree with it, but at the same time, they got 1.2 billion people and they don't know what to do. If every family over there was allowed to have three or four children, the population would be completely unsustainable. So I think that right now they're doing what they have to do. And then he goes on to say that if they continue to have abortions where the female fetuses are aborted, now that they have, you know, amniocentesis and whatnot, they can tell the gender of the child before it's even, you know, in the second, third trimester. They can figure it out real quickly. And so a lot of these female babies are being aborted and the males are being born. And he says, if this happens, there will be a critical shortage of wives. The young men won't have any women to marry. And so it will, in a sense, dilute the racial purity of the Han Chinese. And that to them will be a great tragedy because then they will have to be importing wives from Indonesia. End quote. From CNN, an interview with on CNN. And of course, you know, it goes on. Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell talking about, and this is a question that they have to be asking themselves right now, since they're of the opinion that all of these things are directed by, very specifically, directed by God. What happened yesterday? Well, here are their thoughts on what happened on 9/11.
What we saw on Tuesday, as terrible as it is,
that's Falwell,
could be minuscule if in fact God continues to lift the curtain and allow the enemies of America to give us probably what we deserve.
What we deserve.
Yeah, that's my feeling. I think we've just seen the antechamber to terror. We haven't even begun to see what they can do to the major population.
And that's Robertson. And 9/11, we just heard Falwell say it's what we deserve.
Matt, I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
This is really odd because the ACLU defended Jerry Falwell in his right to incorporate his church as a nonprofit corporation and helped him get his tax-exempt status. And he says the ACLU is at fault. Anyhow, he continues.
Well, I totally...
This is Pat Robertson now.
I concur. And the problem is we have adopted that agenda at the highest levels of our government, and so we're responsible as a free society for what the top people do. And the top people, of course, the court system.
In other words, it's all our fault. 9/11 was all our fault. And now there are some folks who suggest that 9/11 was all our fault, in as much as we had been propping up a corrupt dictatorship in Saudi Arabia. And Osama bin Laden had come out back in 1998 and said, you know, if you guys don't get out of Saudi Arabia and stop supporting the corrupt family of Saud, House of Saud, I'm going to come after you. And he did. And afterwards he said that he was right up front about why he did it. He felt that we were artificially driving down the price of oil by having Saudi Arabia overproduce, overpump, that he felt that the price of oil should be $200 a barrel, that reflected its true value, and that we were artificially holding it low by collusion with a corrupt government. And he's trying to bring down the Saudi Arabian government, has been from the very beginning. In my opinion, that's why he selected, or you know, his agents selected, Sheikh Khalid Mohammed selected 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis, perhaps in the hope that it would immediately lead to the United States, you know, flipping out and going after Saudi Arabia and bringing down the House of Saud, so that there could then be a great Sunni Muslim uprising headed by bin Laden. I mean, it's pretty clear that that was the fantasy that he had in his head. Well, and then yesterday we were confronted by this carnage. And it's shocking carnage for Americans. I mean, it's truly tragic to see our people die. And at the same time that we acknowledge that, I think we also have to acknowledge that if the independent observers are correct and 100,000 innocent civilian Iraqis have died as a result of our activities there, this is setting aside the combatants. And you know, so many of them. I remember that restaurant that we bombed the day before the hostilities began. There's like a bunch of people sitting around in a restaurant. We thought Saddam was there. We dropped a bomb on it. A whole bunch of people died. And they had to have been in as much shock as we are now. It's just so important that we keep in mind that we're all people here. And war dehumanizes people. It's just this terrible thing. And what's going to come out of this? Interesting question in today's Wall Street Journal. Iraq attack raises question, is U.S.'s presence too big? We'll get to that right after this. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. You find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com. If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider the Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Len. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am? Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Welcome back to our program, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Adoption is a game show. Are we disgusted yet? Who is the largest purveyor of pornography in the United States? You might be amazed to discover that it's General Motors. Yep. And we'll get into that in a minute. I want to talk about this dangerous deal that the right has made with the Republican Party, that the Christian right has made, and how it has a lot of conservative Christians very, very concerned. And now the repercussions. Larry Flint today on LarryFlint.com. Good old Larry Flint. Yep. Hustler magazine fame. He's being outdone, by the way, by General Motors in terms of sale of pornography, substantially. But anyhow, he has outed Republican Congressman David Dreyer as gay. And the reason, he says, that he did that is because Dreyer has racked up a 92% anti-gay voting record. And the hypocrisy of that is just unbearable. Just unbearable. Just like the hypocrisy of sending people to war.
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
And for this, our people died yesterday.
This is a massive stockpile of biological weapons and is capable of killing millions. We know that the regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents, including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we knew that we sold them lots of stuff back when Daddy Bush was president, but, you know, it kind of went out of date and Scott Ritter destroyed the rest of it, and Hans Blix told us that. Anyhow, 26 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Willie in South Carolina on the line. Hey, Willie, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing? I'm totally amazed by what you just played. Anyway, what I wanted to ask you about, I know you're going to talk about economics later on and as far as the country, and I was reading in the paper today that there is a new ruling coming out December 31st that there will be no limits to what China and other countries can now sell.
Yeah, this is a World Trade Organization drop on the tariffs on textiles, and it's got textile manufacturers in the United States really worried. It could be the end of all clothing manufacturing here, but it's got Bangladesh terrified. They're just totally freaked out.
And what amazed me is I didn't know there was, I mean, limits anyway. Everything I see now is made in China.
Yeah, no, there are still a lot of tariffs. They're kind of phasing these things in. Right now, China controls 17% of the world textile market. Textiles being things like clothing, right? And you know, woven things, draperies and seat covers and whatever. But most of it's clothing. 17%. The estimate is within 5 years of the time that this ban is lifted, China will control 50% of the world's textile market. And textiles represent the major export for the country of Bangladesh, which basically most people there make their living, you know, in these little hand loom, you know, small factory operation things. And of course, textiles in the United States are doomed. So, yeah, you're right, Willie. It's going to happen.
December 31st, there'll be no limit?
Ed, there's going to be no limit on December 31st. Now, China has said that they're going to voluntarily impose a one-year, not quite a limit. What they're going to do is they're going to cause their industries to slowly ease into this thing over a period of a year, possibly as much as 2 years. And the reason really is a PR reason. They don't want the whole world to just freak out and fall over. They, you know, if all of a sudden the United States loses another 2 million jobs, Bangladesh loses 20 million jobs, Malaysia, so they're going to do it so everybody doesn't all freak out. But within 2 or 3 years, you're going to see the same thing. And this is, you know, why we've lost all these jobs. It's just continuing.
I appreciate it, Tom, and I can't wait to hear about GM.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, we'll get to that right after the break. Willie, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where reason is our lifestyle choice.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live, and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Even though Massachusetts recognizes the legality of gay marriages, some employers have refused to extend health benefits to the spouses of gay workers, opting instead to follow guidelines in the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. Signed into law by President Clinton, the act defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman. General Dynamics, FedEx, and Caritas Christi Healthcare are among the companies refusing to grant equal health care coverage. Gay and lesbian advocacy groups plan to challenge the action in court.
More than 170 Newspaper Guild workers are in the fifth week of a strike against The Vindicator, a family-owned newspaper in Youngstown, Ohio. Deborah Shawless Flora of the Youngstown Newspaper Guild told Workers Independent News that four main issues remain unresolved, including wages and health care. The company has given no raises in 4 years, and 2 years ago pressed union workers to begin paying part of their health care premiums for the first time. The Newspaper Guild says at the time, The Vindicator's owner said all company employees would begin paying a portion of their health premiums, but after agreeing to do it, the union discovered that management and non-union workers had separate health plans and did not have to pay any premiums. A strike paper, The Valley Voice, is being published, and it's available at www.valleyvoiceonline.com. It's been 40 years since the Guild last struck The Vindicator, but concessions beginning in 1993 have taken their toll, and the workers feel they need some improvements before signing another 2-year contract.
After 6 months on the picket line, 155 SEIU nursing home workers in Pittsburgh will be returning to work today without a contract. Presbyterian Senior Care Nursing Home is reserving the right to declare replacement workers permanent. Talks are set to continue over a wage increase, affordable health insurance, and staffing issues.
The Department of Defense is launching a program intended to help injured soldiers returning home find jobs. The DOD says that nearly 10,000 soldiers have been wounded in Iraq since March of 2003, and that doesn't include psychological trauma often caused by warfare. Only 1 in 10 of the U.S. troops wounded in Iraq has died, the lowest rate of any war in U.S. history. But the limb amputation rate of the Iraq War has been double that of past wars. In addition, 20% of the wounded in Iraq have suffered head and neck injuries that will require lifetime medical care.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Despite 3 years of economic recovery, wage growth is stagnant. That's according to new findings by the Economic Policy Institute, an organization that seeks strategies for a fair economy. According to EPI, hourly earnings fell over 1.3% in the last year and are now at the same level as they were in 2001. EPI says that even though the economy began to add jobs last year, the rate of growth has been too slow to make a difference in the job market, discouraging employers to pass along profits to workers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Here's the story of a
Welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, saying that 9/11 is the result of liberals destroying morality in America. There's Pat Robertson, who owns a racehorse, who owns part of a gold mine in Liberia in partnership with the good old Charles Taylor. But here's and we've heard all this rant. Terry M. Neal did this marvelous piece in the Washington Post, Tuesday, December 23rd. Yesterday's paper. Since the election. He talks about, all the conservatives are talking about, it's the triumph of values. It's all about values. He quotes an email that he got. I do not think the Democrat Party is, people don't get it. The Democrat, it's not called the Democrat Party. I'm sorry. People who are in the party are called Democrats, but it's the Democratic Party. Yes, I know Newt back in the 80s said we shouldn't call it Democratic because that sounds democratic, and democratic is a word that most people have good feelings about. Number one, we need to start saying we don't live in a democracy, we live in a republic. You'll hear that in right-wing talk shows all the time. And number two, stop calling it the Democratic Party, even though that's its official name, even though that's what it says on the building and on the letterhead and everything. Start calling it the Democrat Party, because that sounds a little kind of tin-eared. That sounds a little dissonant. It sounds a little, not quite American. So anyhow, he says, I do not think the Democrat Party is identified justifiably with much of the vulgarization so prominently displayed by many celebrities, particularly the Democrat Party is identified with much of the vulgarization so prominently displayed by many celebrities, particularly those in the entertainment industry. Hey, we pick our friends, end quote. But, notes Terry Neal, Republicans pick their friends, too. He points out Utah County, Utah. Now, this is the second most Republican county in the most Republican state in the entire United States. It's got a population of about 250,000 people, 370,000 people. Largest employer is the Mormon-run Brigham Young University. Brigham Young. I think we're coming up on Joseph Smith's birthday here. It's right around this time, as I recall. When Joseph Smith actually was born here in Vermont, and they kicked him out when he took his second or third wife, said, you can't do that here. He went over to New York State and ended up in Ohio and then, headed west. That's a whole other story. Anyhow, in the mid-1990s, there was a court case where a video store called the Movie Buff in Utah County, Utah, was busted. 15 counts of pornography. They were selling movies like Jugsy and Young Buns 2 and Sex Secrets of High-Priced Call Girls. Prosecutor claimed the store was violating the community standards of suburban Provo, one of the most conservative cities in all of the most Republican Utah county of the most Republican state, Utah. So they did a little discovery. Let's find out what are the community standards of Provo. Well, it turns out that in Utah County, cable subscribers had ordered at least 20,000 explicit movies in the past 2 years. The Suncoast Video Store in the town of Orem was deriving 20% of its rental sales from adult movies, even though the adult movies only constituted 2% of its inventory. Dirty Joe Punsters in nearby Spanish Fork, an adult specialty store, was racking up an average of $110,000 a year, selling sex toys, blow-up dolls, and other adult fare. The Provo Marriott, across the street from the courthouse, sold 3,448 adult pay-per-view movie rentals just in that year, 1998. So it turns out that the values of the county were the more common value in the county was pornography? Sure. As similar in Hamilton County, Ohio, conservative Cincinnati suburb, another heavily Republican area, prosecutors filed obscenity charges against two local video stores. Same thing, selling dirty movies. Turns out, as the Cincinnati Inquirer noted, last year more than 21,000 Hamilton County residents purchased 26,000 explicit videos. In January of this year, 182,000 greater Cincinnati residents, an estimated 70,000 from Hamilton County, visited an adult website at least once. Nielsen Net Ratings found that 21.8% of all residents here in this county who went online visited an adult site. In recent months, Hamilton County residents bought adult movies on pay-per-view TV at about the same rate as viewers did in other mid-sized markets. In other words, they're into porn in Hamilton County. This is a county that that favored Bush over Kerry 53-47%. You look at programs, Desperate Housewives, about a married woman having an affair with a 17-year-old gardener, who's her friend's son, as I recall. Show performed better in the November sweeps in the red states markets. Dallas-Fort Worth, it was number one. Atlanta, number two. Kansas City, number two. Then it did in the blue state markets. It was fourth in New York, fifth in Chicago, third in Boston. The values, that then he points out, when Republicans talk about values, what they're really talking about is sex. But what you find is that there's more unwed mothers in the red states than the blue states. There's a higher abortion rate. There's a higher divorce rate. The states with the highest divorce rate per capita are all red states. And the states with the lowest divorce rates per capita are all blue states. So then this defense attorney in Utah County, back in this Utah County case, the guy's a Mormon. He says, let's figure out where this pornography is coming from. A lot of it's coming from Republicans, he said. He, by the way, considers himself a Republican. He pointed out that Mitt Romney, the Republican governor of Massachusetts, on the board of Marriott International at the time, making huge margins and piping porn into hotel rooms. New York Times pointed this out in a 4,000-word piece by Timothy Egan a year or so ago. Quote, the General Motors Corporation, the world's largest company, now sells more graphic sex films every year than does Larry Flint, owner of the Hustler Empire. The 8.7 million Americans who subscribe to DirecTV, a General Motors subsidiary, buy nearly $200 million a year in pay-per-view sex films from satellite. Larry Flint's a piker. Who's the number two purveyor of pornography in the United States? Well, it turns out it's the owner of Fox News. Mr. Murdoch, EchoStar Communications Corporation, the number two satellite provider, whose chief financial backers include Mr. Murdoch, makes more money selling a graphic adult film through its satellite subsidiary than Playboy does. You thought Playboy was big in the sex business? Nah, they're nothing compared to Rupert Murdoch. AT&T Corporation, the nation's biggest communications company, offers a hardcore sex channel called the Hot Network to subscribers of its broadband cable service. It also owns a company that sells sex videos to nearly a million hotel rooms. Nearly one out of every five of AT&T's broadband cable customers pay an average of $10 a film to see what a distributor calls, quote, real live all-American sex not simulated by actors, end quote. So we have a situation where on the one hand, Fox News employs commentators who promote the connection between Republicans and family values, and on the other hand, it's out there making money, pushing pornography, and doing quite well with it, actually, Mr. Murdoch. There have been a few mergers and acquisitions, by the way, since then. And, you know, some of the players have changed a little bit. GM sold some of its one of its divisions and this and that. However, since 1994, General Motors has given all of its political contributions to the Republican Party. That doesn't include the millions spent by GM affiliates and subsidiaries like Hughes Electronics, the former parent of DirecTV, 61% of the money to the GOP. Remember George Bush's famous popular stump speech? My job will be to usher in the responsibility era, a culture that will stand in stark contrast to the last few decades, which has clearly said to America, if it feels good, do it. If you got a problem, blaming somebody else. Yeah. Well, apparently Bush is saying, if it feels good, charge people for it and make some money on it.
That I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle.
And General Motors and AT&T and Marriott and Hyatt and all the other, every hotel. And
the ACLU, People for the American Way.
The ACLU, those folks who defend Jerry Falwell in court.
All of them who tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen.
this being 9/11. Ah, Jerry Falwell, such a paragon of virtue. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Victor in Alabama on the line. Hey, Victor, what's on your mind today?
Hey, yeah, you were just speaking about Jerry Falwell. This guy, in October, got off the Tim Russell show, and Jesse Jackson was with him. And I think it was Tim asked him how he felt about the insurgency or what he would do about it all. He says, blow them all away in the name of the Lord.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. It sent chills down my spine. He had such a great big smile on his face when he was talking about killing people. I thought, you know, it's just like George W. Bush laughing and making jokes about Carla Faye Tucker to that Time magazine reporter.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Victor, thanks. Say, you were going to say something. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I said that's basically what I wanted to say. I just get tired of hearing him spout off about how moral he is. And
Yeah.
You know, and this is the guy they look to as a moral compass, and he can sanction wholesale killing with the drop of a hat in the name of the Lord.
Yeah, there you go. Well, he's not the first. He's not absolutely, Victor, thanks for the call. He's absolutely not the first to sanction wholesale killing in the name of the Lord, or in the name of, you know, anything else. And which brings us, of course, to this question raised in the Wall Street Journal today of that. Oh, that's Chris and Charlie. We'll get to that in a second. The audacious attack on the U.S. military base in Iraq yesterday, that whether the large U.S. presence is becoming an impediment to progress toward a stable government there. See, I think it's ironic that you find articles like this in the Wall Street Journal. Because the rest of the media has been so intimidated by the right, but this is the right, right? So they're anyhow. Growing sentiment among senior military officials. This is an article by Yochi Drazen and Greg Jaffe in today's Wall Street Journal. Growing sentiment among senior military officials that the large U.S. presence in the country is helping fuel the insurgency it's intended to combat. These officials argue that U.S. troops might be undermining the legitimacy of the interim Iraqi government and creating the impression that an unpopular occupation will continue indefinitely. This is what I have been saying all along, that we need to get out of there to the extent that we can, as quickly as we can, and that will not promote civil war, although that it may be inevitable now because Bush has screwed this thing up so badly for a year and a half, Bush and Rumsfeld. It will not so much promote civil war as it will promote some sort of stability coming to the country. Now, it might not be the kind of stability that we like, but that, I mean, odds are after the elections we're not going to have what we like. It's not going to be Paul Wolfowitz's fantasy. These people don't understand Thomas Jefferson. It's not part of their culture. We are probably going to see a Shiite government, but, you know, aligned with Iran. We have done Iran's work for them, and they're just sitting over there going, that Bush, he's such a sucker. I'm so glad he took out Saddam. We tried to kill him for 8 years, and we couldn't do it. But we have become more of an irritant there, and I'm convinced. I'm just absolutely convinced, and I say this with love for my country and hope for the future of Iraq, a hope for the future of a democratic Iraq. I agree that it would be a wonderful thing to have a democratic Iraq. And I think, therefore, that the fastest way to get to that is to get us out of there as quickly as we can. Chris in Charlotte, North Carolina on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, this is Chris in North Carolina.
Yeah, in North Carolina, yeah.
I was just thinking about like what you were saying about like how we're trying to turn that into like some kind of like democratic government. And I keep on thinking like the only thing that they know over there is Europeans going over there for probably about the past 1,000 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like I'm taking them over, you know, like the last guy they hung. I was really trying to put in place.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I almost wonder if people in America actually think that the reason they went over there was to free those guys.
Well, there was a story in yesterday's Wall Street Journal that was a profile of one of the up-and-coming, I don't recall if he was a Sunni or a Shia. I had it in my stack for yesterday. I don't have it here in front of me today. But it was, you know, he's one of these guys who's running for office, and it started out talking about how he went to Monticello. He made a pilgrimage to Monticello. He came to the United States. He loves Thomas Jefferson, And he's saying women should not be allowed to go out in public unveiled. They should not be allowed to participate in public office. They should not be allowed to vote. And he considers himself a liberal Democrat by Iraqi standards. Go figure.
Well, I guess the thing I'd ask is, are we more like interested in those guys becoming like a democratic government, or are we more interested in us keeping control of those fields?
Well, that's the bottom line, and that's why all these years we've supported dictators over there. You know, we propped up the Shah, we propped up Saddam Hussein, we put him into power, and the reason why was because we wanted a stability in the region so we could get our oil, and it didn't matter whether they were democratic or not.
Are those privately held now by American companies?
The oil in Iran, or in Iraq, rather?
In Iraq, yes.
Yeah. Frankly, the problem here is that the U.S. government and the Iraqi government say that all that stuff is secret. In fact, there was an article a week or so ago in the journal about how there has been no good accounting of how much oil has been pumped out of Iraq since we got there. They can't even tell how much oil has been pumped out.
Well, that's the thing I'm saying is it's almost like we're saying all this news over here, but, I mean, what are those guys going to think when they know an American company owns...
Yeah. Well, that's what they're already thinking. That's what they're already thinking, Chris. They are convinced of it, that we came over there for their oil, and we're not doing much to help dissuade them of that. Thanks for the call. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio.
In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxon Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Well, that one didn't quite plan out, did it? Welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number, and let's see. Whoops, I lost my window there. It's Alan in Georgia on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for reading my letter on the air last Monday.
Oh, you're the Alan who wrote the letter to the editor. Yes, that was brilliant. That was brilliant. Well done, Alan.
Oh, thank you. Hey, I found out that we truck drivers cannot join the union unless we get a contract and join the group.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
But there's another organization called OIDA, Owners, Operators, Independent Drivers Association.
Right.
Which I would think would be the next best thing.
Yeah, so do they, but they can't engage in collective bargaining. They can just kind of represent your interests, sort of like AARP represents retired people, sort of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a start, and thanks for the report back. I'm assuming you got that information from talking to the Teamsters.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay.
They didn't give me much help.
Yeah, well, they can't. I mean, this is the problem. The game has been rigged. You know, ever since Reagan came in, the cons have been just tearing away at union protections, and it's getting harder and harder. Alan, congratulations. You're a jolly good fella for writing that letter to the editor of the newspaper, and it was brilliant. Thanks a lot for calling. Great to hear from you. Keep up the good work. I'm going to move along here. We have Rick in Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind today?
A good show, as always.
Thank you.
I always feel when I listen to you like I'm hearing myself talk, and it's good.
Well, okay.
Now, I just heard bits and pieces. I haven't been able to listen to every minute of your program the first hour. What's this about Larry Flint outing David Dreyer? That's not a joke?
Outing David Dreyer. Yeah. LarryFlint.com. He has outed David Dreyer as being gay. And
you believe that's true?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got. I read the article this morning. It's not only is it nailed down solidly, but there's a bunch of Republicans that are quoted as saying, "Oh yeah, we knew it all along." And
well, I think
here's
the point. Here's the point. I think Larry made it, and I think you would make it, and I would make it. That would be considered dirty politics, except like you said. He voted against gay interest 92% of the time.
That's right, yeah. Larry knows, actually, of a bunch of other gay politicians who are in the closet that he hasn't outed because they've been working to help gay causes, And you know, it doesn't want to burn them. But David Dreyer has been jumping on the bash gays bandwagon with the Republicans, and so Larry Flynt says enough. You know, he's into outing hypocrisy. I used to know Larry years ago, and I'll tell you, this is a guy who really has some moral passion. Believe it or not.
I read his book.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, it's a pretty good book. Enough of that. We got to move along. Thanks, Rick, for the call. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of union members are expected to turn out for a St. Louis rally today supporting nurses striking St. John's Medical Center. St. John's nurses on the picket lines in the strike against the medical center are fighting a battle over issues like patient care and staffing that many nurses nationwide are also dealing with. Julie Gunther of Nurses United in Kansas City joined the St. Louis nurses on the cold picket line.
We know that the situation for registered nurses across our state and country is really dire as far as staffing conditions and quality nurse retention, and we just wanted to come and show our solidarity and support to them. We know they're advocating for their patients, and that's what registered nurses are all about.
St. Louis's organized labor community is coming together in support of the striking nurses. Today's rally will include the Greater St. Louis Labor Council, St. Louis Building and Construction Trades, Missouri AFL-CIO, and Teamsters Joint Council 13.
We're out on the picket lines. It's really cold, but it seems to be extremely well organized. They've got several barrels with fires going in them. There's like six strike points all around the perimeter of the hospital, and the community's coming by and honking and waving, and we've got firefighters out here, Teamsters out here, Missouri State AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer's out here.
5 months of tense negotiations between UFCW grocery workers in Northern California and three major grocery chains came to an end on Sunday. 19,000 union members had threatened to strike at Safeway, Albertsons, and Ralph's grocery stores if a new contract could not be reached by midnight Sunday. The new tentative agreement does not include employee-paid premiums for healthcare benefits or a two-tier wage and benefit structure, two items the union fought against successfully.
More than a million workers in southern India's fishing industry began a strike last week. The workers, who anchored more than 6,000 fishing vessels along the southern coast of the country, are demanding fuel subsidies and a ban on fishing by foreign firms. The fishers, represented by India's Fishing Boat Operators Association, blamed foreign companies for a substantial decline in their daily catch over the last 2 years. The association says that locals can't compete with the technology equipped on the foreign vessels, giving them an unfair advantage. India has also seen a decline in exports ever since the United States placed duties on shrimp imports. The U.S. was India's second largest shrimp buyer.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers are increasingly obese. A study in the December Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine finds that 29% of workers in the U.S. are obese. Obesity can add the equivalent of 20 years in age in terms of increased cardiovascular risks and decreased productivity. It's a substantial 9% increase over a similar study done 10 years ago. Increases were also found in the rate of high cholesterol and diabetes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
Hear about the quiet assault on poor people in America today on Hightower Radio. While the economic numbers for the vast majority of Americans continue to be bad, there is one little noticed group that is showing remarkable growth. Poor people. In America, the richest country in the history of the world, the poverty rolls are rising dramatically and shamefully. The number of poor people is up by 4.8 million in the last 4 years. That's just the officially poor. There are another 39 million people who are now among the working poor. While technically not in poverty, their jobs pay so poorly that they can't make ends meet for the basics in life. Unfortunately, these folks are mostly out of sight and out of mind. The mass media ignores them, and we just had a presidential election that supposedly was about moral values, yet neither party even mentioned the immorality of rising poverty in the midst of plenty. Worse, the Bushites are now going after the few effective efforts we are still making to address poverty, from education to retirement security. Much of the monkey wrenching being done by Bush and company takes place in the dark, quietly trying to dismantle popular programs that actually work. For example, the Community Reinvestment Act has been a solid success in helping low-income communities get the investments and bank services they must have to revitalize their neighborhoods. This 30-year-old law has caused banks all across America to serve low-income people, channeling more than $1 trillion into loans for small business development and home ownership in inner cities and distressed rural towns. Yet, Bush's laissez-faire ideologues are working hard to gut the law. Two federal agencies charged with enforcing it are proposing to exempt at least 1,000 banks, as well as many S&L lenders, from having to comply, thus abandoning entire communities most in need of opportunities. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop this assault, call ACORN, 202-547-2500.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add him to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Huh.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. I have to share with you one of the most amazing things. I'm going to share with you in a few minutes an excerpt. Joe McPherson, fellow who was for the first year of our program, back when we were on the IE America Radio Network, back 2 years ago. It'll be 3 years ago next week. Joe has a website called zenpickle.com. And Joe and I were kicking around this idea one day. We were actually talking about doing it as a radio show element. And it was, what if we were to take Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler and take one of his screeds against the Jews and simply replace the word Jew with the word liberal, would it make sense? How would people react to it? So Joe did that. It's on his website, zenpickle.com. He actually turned it into a book, It's called Mein Kampf Second Edition by Ann Coulter, is what he says. So obviously, it's a pastiche. And I'm going to share part of it with you, but I got to tell you, Joe posted this thing, which you're going to hear in a few minutes. Joe posted this thing on a conservative website and said, what do you guys think about this? Does this sound familiar? Didn't cite the source, right? And he gets back a bunch of interesting posts and great quote and all these folks. This is over on the famousidiot.com website. Remarkable. Remarkable. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. TomHartmann.com, the website, if you'd like to drop into our chat room and say hi. It's going to be an interesting day here. The chat room is well populated. Lots of folks in there having, as usual, one of the most erudite, interesting, fascinating, fun, sexy, entertaining. Did I say sexy? Well, sometimes it is. Entertaining, insightful, adult, well, I think it's suitable for, I wouldn't send a preteen in there, but it's suitable for an informed teenager. It's civil. It's rational. It's not obscene. Well, populated, Jay Kevin goes, well, populated. Yeah, there's a, anyhow, if you want to get over there, just go to TomHartmann.com and click on live chat. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, which hosts our chat room. Xavier in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Xavier, what's on your mind today?
Hi, good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Yeah, I got a theory. I wanted to, you're familiar with, I think you, did you mention this morning about a website, something about Shop Blue or something like
Choose
that?
Choose the Blue.
Choose the Blue, right.
.com.
Now, as I recall, you tend to be against boycotts. Is that correct or not?
Well, no, I have no problem with boycotts.
Okay.
Here's my problem. I am opposed to people who suggest that the solution to political problems is economic, in as much as they say, well, the way that we need to solve the problem of Walmart wiping out communities is just don't buy at Walmart anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, the reality is, you know, where I live in this little town in Vermont, we got a Walmart that moved in 20 miles away, and now all the local stores that sell bedding are out of business.
Right.
So if I want to buy a pillow, I've got to go to Walmart. I don't have any choice.
Well, here's my theory. If I think that boycotts are fine. You shouldn't just do them willy-nilly. There should be some thought behind it.
Sure.
But, you know, we're going to boycott companies that support Republicans, and then the Republicans are probably going to boycott groups that support Democrats.
And there's actually a movement to do that. There is also a, you know, choose the red. I'm not sure that that's the website.
Well, here's my point, though. That may be a way to get rid of corporate funding of politics.
Well, it may, you know, it may cause some corporations to be more egalitarian, more willing to split their political contributions down the middle.
What I'm hoping is the same with this idea with the you know, Merry Christmas versus Happy Holidays.
Yeah.
It might get to the point where corporations and companies say, you know, I haven't got an opinion. Opinions are bad for business.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the problem. With regard to Merry Christmas, yeah. I mean, you know, the decision to go with Happy Holidays is just it was, at least until the right started, you know, banging their drums, it was a decision to reach out to everybody, which is just more profitable. It just makes good business sense. On the other hand, if corporations giving money to politicians causes them to get goodies, in other words, if it's a good investment, then they've got a good business reason to do it. Then if it becomes a PR problem because they gave most of their money to one party, they'll just start doing 50-50 both parties, and we still have a corrupted system.
Yeah, and so, they'll still expect something from each party they donate to is what you're saying.
Well, that, or they may just gratuitously donate to the Democrats in order to have access to the Republicans without getting beat up on websites like Choose the Blue.
Okay. One last quick thing, Tom?
Yeah, well, just to react, let me finish this thought here, Xavier, and that is that what we have is a broken system. We have an absolutely broken system, and we need to fix it. And there's a variety of ways it can be fixed, and it's a discussion that's not even being engaged in right now, and it's a discussion that we need to have, how to fix the system, how to get money out of it.
My quick question for you is, I have a business idea, and I'm not a business person. I'm more of a techno nerd, and I'm looking for support from business people. I know you've started a number of corporations, and I was wondering, is there a way I can get in touch with you off the air or something to discuss something with you? Is that something that you do?
Would you be willing to discuss it on the air?
At some point, yeah. I'd like to talk off the air first, though.
Hmm.
Or something like
well,
that.
Well, you know, I what I would be pleased to do, Xavier, is is to the extent that I can, in small bits over a period of time, so it doesn't just consume an entire show,
sure,
is offer you whatever advice or thoughts I may have that may or may not be useful on the air, because I think it would be interesting to our listeners.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you're concerned about giving away an idea and everybody's going to jump on it, something like that, you know, I understand that, but let me tell you, ideas are a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
There's almost no such thing as an idea somebody else hasn't thought of.
Right.
It's not the idea, it's the execution. And you can take the worst idea, and if you do it well, you can make money with it. And if you take the most brilliant idea and do it poorly, you'll lose money. So it really has more to do with how you do it. But
I guess what I'm saying is something I wanted to, before I go on the air, I want to make it interesting as possible. So I wanted to, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff.
You're ringing my bells there, as I suspect you knew you would. Why don't you drop me an email?
Okay.
And we'll talk about it. You have my email address, right? It's tom@tomhartman.com. And it's not a secret. It's right on my website.
Okay, great.
tomhartman.com.
All right.
Cool. Thanks Xavier. Good to hear from you. 14 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's get to this. And I think it's appropriate for the holiday season because after Adolf Hitler in 1933 officially merged, excuse me, early 1934, officially merged the German Republic and the German Lutheran Church and appointed Pastor Mueller as the Reichsbishop. Mueller committed suicide at the end of the war. No relation to or affiliation with the Gottfried Mueller, who is my friend and mentor, about whom I wrote a book called The Prophet's Way, a German who lives in Germany, who is now 92 years old, who was in Hitler's army. But that's a whole other discussion. No relation in any case. Because Hitler had declared this official merging of church and state, I think that this is appropriate because this was Hitler's thing. Christmas was his thing. He loved Christmas. It was a great propaganda opportunity for the Reich, for the Third Reich. So here, this as edited by Joe McPherson, this from Chapter 10 of Mein Kampf, or as Joe puts it, from Ann Coulter's Mein Kampf Second Edition. It must be admitted that all this, the title, by the way, Why American Society Collapsed. And, of course, in the original it said Why German Society Collapsed. You realize there have been some small editorial changes here made. It must be admitted that all this was partly the result of extraordinary crafty tactics on the part of liberals on the one hand and obvious official stupidity or naivete on the other hand. The liberals were too clever to allow a simultaneous attack to be made on the whole of their press. No one section functioned as cover for the other. The national papers, also in liberal hands, knew how to camouflage themselves as model examples of objectivity. They studiously avoided harsh language, knowing well that blockheads are capable of judging only by external appearances and never able to penetrate to the real depth and meaning of anything. This form of human frailty was carefully studied and understood by the liberal press. Certainly in days to come, the liberals will raise a tremendous cry throughout their newspapers once a hand is laid on their favorite nest, once a move is made to put an end to the scandalous liberal press, and once this instrument which shapes public opinion is brought under conservative control and no longer left in the hands of liberals and enemies of the people. I am certain that this will be easier for us than it was for our fathers. The scream of the 12-inch shrapnel is more penetrating than the hiss from 1,000 liberal newspaper vipers. Therefore, let them go on with their hissing. By means of the liberal press, the liberals spread the colossal falsehood about American militarism throughout the world and tried to inculpate America by every possible means, while at the same time the Democratic Party refused to assent to the measures that were necessary for the adequate training of our national defense forces. What soon gave me cause for very serious consideration were the activities of the liberals in certain branches of life, into the mystery of which I penetrated little by little. Was there any shady undertaking? Any form of foulness, especially in cultural life, in which at least one liberal did not participate? On putting the probing knife carefully to that kind of abscess, one immediately discovered, like a maggot in a putrescent body, a little liberal who was often blinded by the sudden light. In my eyes, the charge against liberalism became a grave one the moment I discovered the liberal activities in the press, in art, in literature, in the theater. All unctuous protests are now more or less futile. Here was a pestilence, a moral pestilence, with which the public was being infected. I was happy at last to know for certain that a liberal is not an American. Slightly edited, Mein Kampf, Chapter 10, by Adolf Hitler. So do you notice any parallels? I found this interesting, actually. And this is a formula that Hitler put together, and it still works today. It's just a very straightforward formula. In fact, in Chapter 6 of Mein Kampf, he talks about how to do it. I want to get into that in another program. But he talks about how to do it. It's a very simple formula. Identify real problems within a society, such as crime, poverty, or unemployment. Number one. Number two, invent a conspiracy responsible for these problems. Say that it's led by a specific bunch of people, specific group, and hyperinflate a few anecdotes to make the conspiracy seem vast and powerful. Say that they're trying to destroy the nation by weakening its defenses and corrupting its morals, thus causing the economic pains felt by the average person. Because that's who you're trying to reach, right? Rally the people behind you in self-defense to restore military strength, moral clarity, and empower the wealthy and great corporations to, quote, create jobs, end quote. You know, it's not only politically potent and powerful and useful, but it's also based on the big lie. I mean, you know, corporations don't create jobs. The marketplace, the demand for things creates jobs. And for there to be demand for things, people must have a decent paycheck. See, it kind of goes around and around and around. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman program where truth is not negotiable. Non-negotiable? Well, non-negotiable means you can't spend it, doesn't it? Anyhow, welcome back to our program. It's 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Time for our daily report from Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, we just finished our holiday reading of Mein Kampf, of all the strange things. Joe McPherson went through and changed liberal to a Jew to liberal and Germany to American. And it reads so much like Ann Coulter that when he reposted it on a bunch of conservative websites, they all thought it was.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you saw it.
I wrote a piece about it.
If you go to commondreams.org, it's right there on the homepage. Okay. It was the top story on Monday on commondreams.org. It's called National Victimhood, All Wrapped and Delivered for Christmas by Tom Hartman.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'll take a look.
Yeah, you'd be amazed.
Speaking of victimhood, it looks like the U.S. is doing their thing with all the Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and everywhere else.
Concentration camp.
The more papers they uncover, the more embarrassing it is. And so I expect that in the new year we're going to even see a lot more, and there's quite a bit of talk about that here in this town.
Yeah.
Second thing that you might be interested in is, of course, this entire issue of what happened yesterday with our soldiers in Mosul and the fact that Bush has clearly gotten intelligence that says that things are really disintegrating there, or he would have never made the statements that he made in that press conference.
Do you think so? You know, I really wondered about that because I figured he was just – I was surprised nobody called him on it, first of all. But beyond that, it seemed to me like he was just –
You only get one question. Everybody wants to please their bosses.
Yeah, I thought it was just one of those candid moments. For example, like when he said you can't win the war on terror, or when he said we found no evidence to connect Saddam Hussein to Osama bin Laden. I mean, he actually said those things in news conferences, and you know, the media just kind of let it. They gave him a pass on both of them. They just let it slide by. Kerry tried to use the former one in the campaign, but it didn't stick. Now, I figured he was just being candid. You think that he was trying to telegraph a message to somebody?
Oh, I think he sort of was. I mean, I think he was being candid, but I think this is the first time that he has, you know, really been clear about the fact that things are kind of a mess over there, because I think the intelligence that's coming from there is looking worse and worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking about this in the first hour of the program. I'm just absolutely convinced that we have become more of a problem than a solution. We are more of an irritant than we are a salve. And the faster we can get ourselves out of there, the faster that situation is going to calm down and resolve itself.
I don't disagree, and we need to bring our troops home this new year.
very, very quickly.
Yeah.
By the way, the other thing that's happening is Mark Melman gave some interviews. He's, of course, Ken Melman. I get my two Melmans mixed up. Ken Melman gave some interviews today, and he said that the RNC is trying to work on, and the Bush administration is trying to work on widening their base but still keeping their core. That ought to be a piece of acrobatics.
Well, speaking of widening their base, Ellen, Larry Flynt today outed David Dreyer. And Ken Melman has been outed in a number of publications, in a number of smaller or underground or gay publications, but it hasn't hit the mainstream. Do you think that is that coming down the road? Is that going to be an issue?
Well, yes. I mean, particularly with people like David Dreyer and Congress members. I mean, this is just ridiculous.
Well, Flint's thing was that these guys are
hypocrites. Earlier than now.
Yeah, exactly.
Vote on the gay marriage thing in the Senate, and I was up at the gallery, and I can look at all their heads and see who hasn't gotten their roots done in the most recent times. I will tell you, I was outraged because I know many of those people cheat on their wives. Forget about the gay issue. They just cheat on their wives. Who are they to be holier than thou?
Yeah, yeah, and when that was Larry Flint's point. He said that he knows of a bunch of gay members of Congress he's not going to out, but David Dreyer has a 92% voting record against gay issues, and so he's outing him. And it's just the hypocrisy is mind-boggling. Ellen, thanks so much for being with us again today. We'll see you tomorrow, eh?
You got it.
Okay, 29 minutes past the hour.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Even though Massachusetts recognizes the legality of gay marriages, some employers have refused to extend health benefits to the spouses of gay workers, opting instead to follow guidelines in the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. Signed into law by President Clinton, the act defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman. General Dynamics, FedEx, and Caritas Christi Healthcare are among the companies refusing to grant equal health care coverage. Gay and lesbian advocacy groups plan to challenge the action in court.
More than 170 Newspaper Guild workers are in the fifth week of a strike against The Vindicator, a family-owned newspaper in Youngstown, Ohio. Deborah Shawless Flora of the Youngstown Newspaper Guild told Workers Independent News that four main issues remain unresolved, including wages and health care. The company has given no raises in 4 years, and 2 years ago pressed union workers to begin paying part of their health care premiums for the first time. The Newspaper Guild says at the time the Vindicator's owners said all company employees would begin paying a portion of their health premiums, but after agreeing to do it, the union discovered that management and non-union workers had separate health plans and did not have to pay any premiums. A strike paper, The Valley Voice, is being published, and it's available at www.valleyvoiceonline.com. It's been 40 years since the Guild last struck the Vindicator, but concessions beginning in 1993 have taken their toll, and the workers feel they need some improvements before signing another 2-year contract.
After 6 months on the picket line, 155 SEIU nursing home workers in Pittsburgh will be returning to work today without a contract. Presbyterian Senior Care Nursing Home is reserving the right to declare replacement workers permanent. Talks are set to continue over a wage increase, affordable health insurance, and staffing issues.
The Department of Defense is launching a program intended to help injured soldiers returning home find jobs. The DOD says that nearly 10,000 soldiers have been wounded in Iraq since March of 2003, and that doesn't include psychological trauma often caused by warfare. Only 1 in 10 of the U.S. troops wounded in Iraq has died, the lowest rate of any war in U.S. history. But the limb amputation rate of the Iraq War has been double that of past wars. In addition, 20% of the wounded in Iraq have suffered head and neck injuries that will require lifetime medical care.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Despite 3 years of economic recovery, wage growth is stagnant. That's according to new findings by the Economic Policy Institute, an organization that seeks strategies for a fair economy. According to EPI, hourly earnings fell over 1.3% in the last year and are now at the same level as they were in 2001. EPI says that even though the economy began to add jobs last year, the rate of growth has been too slow to make a difference in the job market, discouraging employers to pass along profits to workers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
It's time to get free. Free of the merger of corporate and state interests, otherwise known in the American Heritage Dictionary as fascism, particularly when combined with belligerent nationalism. Having read chapter 10 of Mein Kampf, reading is not something, you know, I banned poor Armin for a week from the radio show for reading on the air. But I'm going to do it. I guess it's my prerogative here. And frankly, I think I do it fairly well. So hopefully it won't put you to sleep. I want to share with you the other side of the story. Right after World War II ended, there was a reporter in Chicago by the name of Milton Mayer. He was quite outspoken. I believe his father was a Jew and his mother was a Quaker. It might have been the other way around. Anyhow, He was an American Jew who had friends and had lost family. Everybody knew what had happened in Germany in the 40s. This was 1945, 1946, and was horrified by it. And particularly people in the Jewish community in the United States, most had some connection to somebody somewhere, and it hit home really hard. And so Mayer went over to Germany, and he spent a couple of years there, talking to average Germans, getting to know them quite well, becoming friends with them, and asking them basically what was it like during those 10 years, 10, 11, 12 years of the Third Reich. How did it happen? How did you allow it to happen? What was your role in it? Why didn't you stop it? Didn't you see what was going on? Couldn't you understand? And he wrote a book that has come back into print this year. I believe it's the University of Chicago Press. One of the university presses just came out with it, but it's been out of print for about a decade. And it's called They Thought They Were Free. And I want to share with you just a few little pieces. The first is by Mayer himself. He's now living in Germany, and he's writing about what happened there. And he says, what happened here was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving deliberations decided in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand, or so dangerous that even if the people could understand it, it could not be released because of national security. A friend of his, one of the people that he interviewed, told him, speaking of this issue, this separation of government from people, this widening of the gap, took place so gradually and so insensibly, each step disguised, perhaps not even intentionally, as a temporary emergency measure, are associated with true patriotic allegiance or with real social purposes. And all the crises and reforms, real reforms too, so occupied the people that they did not see the slow motion underneath of the whole process of government growing remoter and remoter. To live in this process is absolutely not to be able to notice it. Please try to believe me, unless one has a much greater degree of political awareness, acuity, than most of us ever had occasion to develop. Each step was so small, so inconsequential, so well explained, or on occasion regretted, that unless one were detached from the whole process from the beginning, unless one understood what the whole thing was in principle, what all these little measures that no patriotic German could resent must someday lead to, one no more saw it developing from day to day than a farmer in his field sees the corn growing until one day it is over his head. In this conversation, by the way, Mayer's friend was suggesting he wasn't making an excuse for not resisting the rise of the fascists. He was simply pointing out an unmistakable, undisputable reality. This, he suggests, is how fascism will always take over a nation. Again, quoting Milton Mayer's friend, Pastor Neil Muller spoke for the thousands and thousands of men like me when he spoke too modestly of himself and said that when the Nazis attacked the communists, he was a little uneasy, but after all, he was not a communist, and so he did nothing. And when they attacked the socialists, he was a little uneasier, but still he was not a socialist, and he did nothing. And then the schools, and the press, and the Jews, and so on. And he was always uneasier, but still he did nothing. And then they attacked the church, and he was a churchman. And he did something, but then it was too late. Yes, says Mayer. You see, Mayer says, my colleague went on, you see, one doesn't see exactly where or how to move. Believe me, this is true. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for the one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join with you in resisting somehow. You don't want to act or even to talk alone. You don't want to go out of your way to make trouble. Why not? Well, you're not in the habit of doing it. And it's not just fear of standing alone that restrains you. It is also genuine uncertainty. Uncertainty is a very important factor. And instead of decreasing as time goes on, it grows. Outside in the streets and the general community, everyone's happy. One hears no protest and certainly sees none. You know, in France or Italy, there'll be slogans against the government painted on walls and fences. In Germany, outside the great cities perhaps, there is not even this. In the university community, in your own community, this fellow he was talking to was a professor, you speak privately to your colleagues, some of whom certainly feel as you do, but what do they say? They say, it's not so bad. You're seeing things. Or you're an alarmist. And you are an alarmist. You are saying that this must lead to this. And you can't prove it. These are the beginnings, yes. But how do you know for sure when you don't know the end? And how do you know or even surmise the end? On the one hand, your enemies, the law, the regime, the party, they intimidate you. On the other, your colleagues poo-poo you as pessimistic or even neurotic. But the one great shocking occasion, when tens or hundreds or thousands will join you, never comes. That's the difficulty. If the last and worst act of the whole regime had come immediately after the first and the smallest, thousands, yes, millions would have been sufficiently shocked. If, for example, the gassing of the Jews in 43 had come immediately after the German firm stickers on the windows of non-Jewish shops in 33. But, of course, this isn't the way it happens. In between come all the hundreds of little steps, some of them imperceptible, each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next. Step B is not so much worse than step B. Step C is not so much worse than step B. And if you did not make a stand at step B, then why should you at step C? And so on to step D. And one day, too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible to them, all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy. and some minor incident. In my case, my little boy, hardly more than a baby, saying, "Jew swine," collapses it all at once. And you see that everything has changed, and changed completely under your nose. The world you live in, your nation, your people, is not the world you were in at all. The forms are all there, all untouched, all reassuring. The houses, the shops, the jobs, the mealtimes, the visits, the concerts, the cinema, the holidays. But the spirit, which you never noticed because you made the lifelong mistake of identifying it with the forms, is changed. Now you live in a world of hate and fear. And the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves. When everyone is transformed, no one is transformed. Now you live in a system which rules without responsibility even to God. Mayer's friend noted, "I do not see, even now, how we could have stopped it. Many times since it all happened, I've pondered that great pair of maxims, principus obsta and finem respis. Resist the beginnings and consider the end." But one must foresee the end in order to resist or even see the beginnings. One must foresee the end clearly and certainly. And how is this to be done by ordinary men or even by extraordinary men? How indeed? Martin Mayer didn't have an answer. My answer is that the experience of 20th century Europe demonstrates that those abusing power must be confronted with equally vigorous power. And the greatest power we have right now is to tell the truth. Hundreds of hours of right-wing programming pour out of radio stations every day nationwide. Conservative extremists are the most common guests and experts on network news and weekend political TV shows. Jeff Cohen comes on this show and tells us that on MSNBC they had a rule when he ran the Donahue show. If you're going to have a liberal on, you have to have two conservatives on. If you have Michael Moore, you have to have three conservatives. Sinclair Broadcast Group owns all these TV stations, ABC, NBC, CBS affiliates. They run these right-wing editorials by Mark Hyman, the former CIA guy. No pretense of balance. Massive election fraud. Now, this has been going on forever, but here it is again. And it's like, let's not even talk about it. A lawsuit has been filed. It was only covered by C-SPAN, Cliff Arnebeck's lawsuit. Our attorney general designate calls the Geneva Conventions quaint. Our secretary of defense stands accused of ordering torture. Our president and vice president knowingly lie to us and the world in order to lead an election year preemptive war. And Congress passes national security bills without even reading them. Eerily, like the German parliament passed the enabling acts after the Reichstag was burned. I'm telling you, friends, it's time to wake up. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John, you apparently think I'm nuts.
Yeah, you are. I mean, I'm just sitting here listening. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing that you have been such a successful corporate titan. That because otherwise you'd kill yourself, man. I mean, it's just awful. Listening.
John, pick a topic. I'm not sitting here picking on you personally.
Well, it feels like it. I mean, it really feels like it.
John, do you have a topic you want to talk about?
Well, how about the dominant conservative media? Is that what you're trying to get across to me?
How many liberals have you seen on TV recently, John, talking about their political opinions?
I mean, you can't be serious.
I am. Give me the name of one liberal that you've seen on TV in the last week talking about political opinion.
Well, let me think here. Let's see. Keith Olbermann.
What was the political opinion that Keith Olbermann was delivering?
I don't watch him.
Well, then, so you've got, you're real authoritative and you don't watch it.
Oh, come on.
John, come on. The only liberals on TV right now are Paul Begala and what's his name? The other guy who's on with him on Crossfire. That's it.
James
Carville.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Oh,
Bill Moyers just retired from now. He was pretty clear about his political agenda.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
so
your point is that the media is dominated by conservatives.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. The opinion-based media. Sure.
When did that happen?
It's been going on for basically since the Reagan era. You know, largely since the rise of right-wing talk radio.
Also, Rather, Brokaw, Peter Jennings.
These guys don't offer political opinion, John.
Jane Pauley.
They don't offer political opinion. They deliver the news.
You know what, Tom? You said it. You said that you were talking about some program where they had no pretense of balance.
Yeah.
That's the difference. The people that have been on for the last 30 years have nothing but pretense of balance. Nothing but pretense of balance, and that's the difference.
Yeah, and none of them are going to go near any stories at all that will harm their corporate masters. They'll end up like Jim Hightower did when he took on Disney, who employed him.
You're reading this Mein Kampf stuff, and the conspiracy theorists are all on your side.
John, what do you think about the fact that when we posted this on a conservative website, everybody said, "Yeah, right."
Well, I don't know what to think about that. But you could probably do the same thing and put substitute conservative in there for liberal, and you'd get this, you'd get all the liberals saying, "Yeah, man." So I mean, it's just goofy. Yeah. Heck, the Nazis were National Socialists. They were leftists.
They were leftists.
They were leftists. Right? They were socialists.
No, I'm sorry. They were rightists.
They were socialists.
Hitler was a conservative. It was a nice word for him to use.
Yeah, and that's great. We're
You're going to try and reinvent Hitler. You know, look up the political spectrum, John.
Oh man. It is just so maddening listening to the stuff you say.
I really appreciate, John, you're doing it day after day. I really do.
As much as I can stand, I like to argue with liberals. I do.
Good. Here I am. So let's argue about specific topics. Now, you have not demonstrated to me that there are any liberals out there in the media who are offering political opinion on a daily basis.
Okay. Well, how much time do you want me to sit down?
I mean, I tune in MSNBC, CNBC, the main networks only do it on the weekends, and they mostly have conservatives on these political shows. The other shows, you know, it's almost all conservatives. It's, you know, Pat Buchanan is everywhere these days. John, I'm sorry, we have hard breaks here. I don't have any control over the break. I'm not trying to cut you off, but we are out of time. I appreciate your call. Call again. We'll continue this conversation. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Last week, the City Council in Salinas, California, capped a series of contentious budget debates with a decision to close all of its public libraries next summer, becoming the largest U.S. city to do so. WIN reporter Vinny Lombardo has more.
Charles Williamson called the council action shameful and says he's worried for kids whose parents can't afford the books, videos, and computers offered at the library.
We're making them stay poor and uneducated. It's not fair. It's not right. It's not what America's about.
It's a bad time.
Salinas Mayor Ana Caballero.
Universally, it's a bad time for cities and county government in our country.
Like many small and mid-sized communities, Salinas is facing huge budget shortfalls and tough choices about which programs to axe. Over the past year, spending was cut by $8.2 million, and the city no longer pays for road repairs, trash pickup, and other services. Closing the three libraries will save about $3.5 million a year.
It's almost like amputations. We're taking apart pieces that we really should be providing.
Caballero says she's not proud of the decision to shut the libraries and blames reduced revenues and state budget takeaways. Sylvia Garcia, a Salinas librarian, doesn't think that's a good enough answer.
And because the monies have been mismanaged, the community is going to pay the price.
In last month's election, Salinas voters rejected Measures A and B, which, if passed, would have added up to $10 million annually to the general fund. Garcia says voters are being punished and wonders why the cuts weren't spread around.
There are many other departments within the city of Salinas, including fire and police, and yet the library is the one that was penalized the most.
While hiring of new police and fire personnel was put on hold, neither department experienced cuts. As for librarians, most are long-term and aren't sure what to expect after receiving their severance pay. Salinas residents will meet mid-January to discuss plans for a new tax initiative. For the Workers Independent News, I'm Vinny Lombardo.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
On the ninth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me a Bill of Rights. Not for gays or blacks or free speech. Not for none of these. But for health insurance companies. On the tenth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me cheaper public schools, cloning corporate tools, teaching to the test, screwing all the rest. If they don't like our new federal standardization of their kids to work in faith-based health insurance companies.
Yes, welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Rich in Chicago, Illinois, on the line. Hey, Rich, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Yeah, very good. Hey, you know, I've been listening a little bit. Every once in a while I have to watch O'Reilly and listen to Fox, and I've been picking up on this new speak that he's been using with the word fascist lately. He uses it almost every night, but to blame. First time I heard him do it, he said that the Muslims were fascists.
Yeah.
Then I heard him say the other day that people trying to bring Christmas down or not use Christmas are fascist. Then yesterday I heard him say that the ACLU were fascist, and I almost passed out because I had to look up the word fascist again to remember what it really meant.
Yeah,
I like how he's trying to redefine it.
Well, the dictionary definition of fascist, and this is from the 1987 American Heritage Dictionary, and it's the entire beginning-to-end definition. There are no qualifiers. It is the merging of corporate and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism.
Exactly.
Period.
But he's trying to say anybody who's trying to, you know, subvert somebody else's rights or ability to worship is considered a fascist,
yeah.
Which I don't understand where he's coming from. But
no,
it's almost like he's trying to redefine the word.
Yeah, and this is why Hitler, at least in the early days, was a fascist. Later on, he became just a plain old garden variety dictator. But he, you know, Mussolini invented this.
Exactly.
And Hitler did merge corporate and state interests. Big corporations built the concentration camps. He brought big corporations into the halls of government. Socialism, on the other hand, as defined by Marx, is where the government owns the means of distribution and supply, manufacture and distribution, rather. And none of that happened under the Nazis. Hitler did not nationalize German industry. On the contrary, he fed huge quantities of money from the German coffers, from the government coffers, into German industry. Volkswagen boomed. Daimler-Benz boomed. All these, you know, all these corporations, they got bigger and stronger because they merged with the government. Not unlike Halliburton!
One quick thing, though, Tom.
Yes,
I did a search on Yahoo as a fascist, and who comes up at number 9 is a biography of President George W. Bush.
Yeah. Look, well, you know, by definition, that's what he's up to. And
it's
a horrible name to call people, but he is merging business and state interests. He's the first businessman president that we've ever had, and it shouldn't be a surprise, I suppose. Rich, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. It's Tom Hartman here with you. Where the light of reason and truth is the best disinfectant. Works equally well on liars and cockroaches. And neocons.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Hundreds of union members are expected to turn out for a St. Louis rally today supporting nurses striking St. John's Medical Center. St. John's nurses on the picket lines in the strike against the medical center are fighting a battle over issues like patient care and staffing that many nurses nationwide are also dealing with. Julie Gunther of Nurses United in Kansas City joined the St. Louis nurses on the cold picket line.
We know that the situation for registered nurses across our state and country is really dire as far as staffing conditions and quality nurse retention, and we just wanted to come and show our solidarity and support to them. We know they're advocating for their patients, and that's what registered nurses are all about.
St. Louis's organized labor community is coming together in support of the striking nurses. Today's rally will include the Greater St. Louis Labor Council, St. Louis Building and Construction Trades, Missouri AFL-CIO, and Teamsters Joint Council 13.
We're out on the picket lines. It's really cold, but it seems to be extremely well organized. They've got several barrels with fires going in them. There's like 6 strike points all around the perimeter of the hospital, and the community's coming by and honking and waving, and we've got firefighters out here, Teamsters out here, Missouri State AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer's out here.
5 months of tense negotiations between UFCW grocery workers in Northern California and 3 major grocery chains came to an end on Sunday. 19,000 union members had threatened to strike at Safeway, Albertsons, and Ralph's grocery stores if a new contract could not be reached by midnight Sunday. The new tentative agreement does not include employee-paid premiums for healthcare benefits or a two-tier wage and benefit structure, two items the union fought against successfully.
More than a million workers in southern India's fishing industry began a strike last week. The workers, who anchored more than 6,000 fishing vessels along the southern coast of the country, are demanding fuel subsidies and a ban on fishing by foreign firms. The fishers, represented by India's Fishing Boat Operators Association, blamed foreign companies for a substantial decline in their daily catch over the last 2 years. The association says that locals can't compete with the technology equipped on the foreign vessels, giving them an unfair advantage. India has also seen a decline in exports ever since the United States placed duties on shrimp imports. The U.S. was India's second largest shrimp buyer.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers are increasingly obese. A study in the December Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine finds that 29% of workers in the U.S. are obese. Obesity can add the equivalent of 20 years in age in terms of increased cardiovascular risks and decreased productivity. It's a substantial 9% increase over a similar study done 10 years ago. Increases were also found in the rate of high cholesterol and diabetes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
One thing we learned from the recent unpleasantness, otherwise known as the presidential election, is that folks in the red states live lives centered around family values that are stronger and fundamentally more moral than the liberal lifestyles of those blue state people in, say, Massachusetts, right? The political pundits insist that this regional morality gap explains George W.'s red state victory and has altered American politics for the foreseeable future. Democrats, they say, are hopelessly out of touch with the deep family values practiced by born-again Christians in the South and Midwestern heartland. Interesting if true, but quick, name the state with the lowest divorce rate in the nation. It's the very state that Bush, the Pat Robertson-style political preachers, and others on the ultra-right constantly denounce as the absolute nadir of decadent liberalism, Massachusetts. Its divorce rate is barely half that of Georgia's home state of Texas, for example. Nor is Massachusetts some sort of statistical anomaly. The region with the lowest rate of family breakups in America is the Northeast, including such blue-blue states as New York, New Jersey, Maine, and lefty-crunchy Vermont. The highest rates are, in of all places, the Bible Belt, where you still see billboards piously proclaiming, "The family that prays together stays together." George Barna, a born-again Christian and the head of a research group that does surveys among faith groups, finds that only 19% of Northeasterners have divorced, compared to 27% of Southerners and Midwesterners. Barna's surveys also revealed another surprise. The divorce rate among conservative Christians is much higher than for other faith groups. 27% of born-again Christians have been divorced, as opposed to 24% of other Christians, and, holy moly, only 21% of atheists and agnostics. This is Jim Hightower saying, maybe the pundits should just quit trying to color-code America.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add them to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
Call
calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends, to the home of reality-based radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Drop by our chat room if you'd like. One of the wisest and most erudite conversations going on the entire internet, live, real time. Go to TomHartman.com and click live chat. Or you can go to our message board and post messages there. Our telephone number to call into the program, 1-866, one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. Interesting news here. As President Bush prepares to disclose the details of his plan to funnel hundreds of billions of dollars, it's actually trillions of dollars. Everybody seems to, you know, let's understate this in a little. But this article by Landon Thomas Jr. in the New York Times yesterday. As he's getting ready to lay out his plans to move money from Social Security, where it's administered by these incredibly boring bureaucrats. I mean, it's just, let's be honest, friends. It is just incredibly boring. I mean, you got people sitting around just taking care of the Social Security money and administering, you know, sending out the checks and making sure that people qualify and busting people for fraud. And these people make a civil service salary. You know, they're making $35,000 a year. They're not, and they've got pensions and they've got health insurance and they don't own stock in it. And they're not getting rich on it. And the employees of Social Security. And so as a result, the checks have been arriving every day since 1936 or whenever they started this thing. And just as steady as clockwork, the checks arrive. Social Security works. Nobody has, tried to rip it off or anything other than, you know, you could argue that George W. is right now, because when he said, gee, we only had a $436 billion budget deficit this year, he failed to mention that he borrowed almost $200 billion from the Social Security Trust Fund. Social Security took in almost $200 billion more this year than it spent. And so he just took that money and spent it. So that was $200 billion less he had to borrow. The actual deficit was around $600 billion. So, you know, I suppose there is that. But by and large, it's this boring, well-administered program. And the folks on Wall Street are saying, we can make this thing sexy. We can spice this up. We can turn it into something really interesting. We can make some money off this. We can get rich down in Chile, you know. You know, the Social Security only costs 1% to administer in the United States. Out of every $99 collected in Social Security, out of every $100 in Social Security taxes collected in the United States, $99 ends up back in the hands of we the people. It only costs 1% to administer the program. Well, down in Chile, they privatized it at the advice of the cons down there. 20%. 20% overhead. Argentina privatized it. It was so bad, the 5% overhead broke the bank. All the money, I mean, it made the bank. All the banks were making out like bandits. It broke the bank of the treasury of the country. Argentina went bankrupt. Why? Because they privatized Social Security. Full stop, end of sentence. That's what did it. No, I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating. That's what did it. Read the news. Google this thing. Read Paul Krugman's article in the New York Times about this a week or two ago. He lays it out better than most. But, I mean, this is no secret. Everybody's known this all along. England did this. Margaret Thatcher. She, you know, Maggie Thatcher. She was the Ronald Reagan clone. And all things government are bad. All things private are good. Let's privatize the Social Security. They call it the pension program there, National Pension Program. It actually is a little more complicated than Social Security because it was already broken up into two or three different pieces. But they took a big chunk of it and they privatized it. And the banks and the brokerage houses were ripping people off so badly that they had to put a cap on how much profit these companies could make. And they capped it out. As I recall, it's around 5%. So now we find Wall Street, to quote Landon Thomas in the New York Times, Wall Street has begun a muted lobbying effort. They're trying to avoid seeming too eager. I mean, they're looking at this going, trillions of dollars? We can make billions in fees? You know, a broker who normally only makes $30 million a year can make $100 million a year. Think of somebody who only makes a couple hundred thousand a year can make millions a year. A brokerage firm that only makes a few billion a year can make hundreds of billions a year. Oh, they're just salivating. In fact, the Social Security, the Securities Industry Association, this is the trade group for the brokers on Wall Street, the people who you invest your money with. They just published a paper saying, we're only going to collect $39 billion in fees. And perhaps considerably more. Only $39 billion. Only $39 billion. Behind the scenes, notes the New York Times, the Alliance for Worker Retirement Security, a business coalition advocating private accounts, has begun meeting with congressional and White House staff members, pushing the idea that private accounts are not only good for the country, but good for business. Club for Growth, remember that group that ran those ads against Howard Dean in Iowa to take his latte-drinking, Volvo-driving Howard Dean back to Vermont? Speaking, by the way, as a resident of the People's Republic of Vermont, where I am at this moment broadcasting live from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, I have to tell you, I don't know anybody who drinks latte. I'll bet they do serve it in town, but I've never seen one. Well, maybe I have and I hadn't noticed. We go into the coffee shop. Most people just, I'll have a cup of coffee. Actually, don't talk quite like that. I can't do a Vermont accent. I didn't grow up here. It's the hype. You can't get there from here. That's about the only sentence I can say in Vermont. Anyhow, it's mostly farmers in Vermont. And people who sharpen chainsaws for a living. I mean, literally. Anyhow, the Club for Growth, this right-wing group that Stephen Moore, who is a frequent guest on talk shows offering his right-wing viewpoints, apropos to our last caller, has been active in a drive for privately held Social Security funds. Members include Richard Gilder of Gilder, Gagnon, Howe & Company, a private invested firm, and Charles H. Bruni, the founder of Oppenheimer Capital. They're supporting like-minded congressional candidates. And the club recently sent out a memorandum to its backers proposing a $15 million public relations and grassroots campaign in favor of private accounts. The Cato Institute has been working on this thing with support from American Express and the American International Group, a large insurance company. Yeah, everybody wants to get into the act. Except, of course, the labor unions and state pension funds who's accused these groups of acting as a stalking horse for the financial industry. Gee, could it be? Could it be? I don't know. Before we go any further with this, let's take a couple calls. Do a reality check here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Rodney in Virginia, is on the line. Hey, Rodney, what's on your mind?
Hello, how are you doing today?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Rodney?
Great. Actually, just started listening to you since you were on C-SPAN a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that was a great show. That was a lot of fun.
It was.
Except I didn't get to go to the bathroom for three hours. But other than that, it was fun.
Right. In fact, there's actually a couple of things I want to say.
Sure.
One is to the last caller who says that, talking about fascism,
mm-hmm.
just if you're listening, the political spectrum goes Nazism, fascism, conservatism on the right, moderate, then on the left it's liberalism, socialism, communism.
Just yeah, so that's the generally accepted definitions of the words right and left. Yeah, I agree.
Right.
Yeah.
But as far as the other thing I want to say is I looked up the word fascism, and I went to an encyclopedia online,
mm-hmm.
and this is what it says. The word fascism has come to mean any system of government resembling Mussolini's. That is, exalts the nation and sometimes race above individual, uses violence and modern techniques of propaganda and censorship to forcefully suppress political opposition, engage in severe economic and social regimentation, espouses nationalism and sometimes racism or ethnic nationalism. In 1932, an Encyclopedia Italiana, written by Giovanni Gentile, made this statement, and this resembles the Bush administration.
And, this statement, by the way, the one by Giovanni Gentile is often attributed to Mussolini, but it was actually Gentile who wrote it. But it had Mussolini's name on it in that 32 edition of the so go ahead.
Right. This is what it says. The state not only is the authority which governs and molds individuals' wills with laws and values of spiritual life, but it is also power which makes its will prevail abroad.
Yeah.
For the fascist, everything is within the state. Neither individual or groups are outside the state.
Yeah, there
For
you
fascism, go. The state is an absolute before which individuals or groups are only relative.
Yeah. And Rodney, even beyond that, I have to say, if you go back and read the entirety of Mussolini's entry for the Italian dictionary, he makes it very clear that his idea was that by merging business interests with state interests, keeping them separate, so it was the antithesis of what Marx had suggested, which is where the state would actually absorb businesses. In Mussolini's view, he would have the businesses essentially absorbing the state. And I believe it was in 33, it might have been 34, it might have been before that, actually. I don't recall the year. But Mussolini actually dissolved Parliament and replaced it with, and I forget how to say it in Italian, I once knew, the Camera del Fascio Corporaciones or whatever. But it's called the Parliament of the Fascist Corporations. And rather than individual people voting for their elected representatives, companies were given the right to represent particular areas, just like the barons of old, you know, the old feudal lords. And he instituted the Parliament of the Fascist Corporations is the English translation of what it was called. So,
right.
And the corporations ran the government. There was this merging of corporate and state interests, and that really is the core of fascism. Although, as you point out correctly, over the years it has morphed into, it has been used to mean regimentation and fear-based politics and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And
what the Bush administration is doing.
Yeah, just to some extent. I'm not ready to say that they are totally fascist. The flag that I'm waving is that we're moving in that direction. And if we don't wake people up to this and start moving back in the direction of democracy, just good old-fashioned Jeffersonian democracy. And in this regard, I even agree with a lot of traditional conservatives. You know, the smaller government, less powerful government, less intrusive government. I really don't need the Patriot Act. Thank you very much. Get them out of my bedroom. I would like the police to have a warrant before they knock on my door. That will move us away from fascism. But I think we're moving in a very dangerous direction. Rodney, thanks for the call. We got to move along.
No problem.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? Nope.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com. If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle.
Yes, the razzle-dazzle.
You gave them an act with lots of flash in it, made them believe. Were compassionate. Gave
yes.
Them the old hocus pocus. Yeah, misdirected them with 9/11 and Saddam Hussein.
What a marvelous act.
You played them both right to perfection, despite the fact there's no connection. You razzle-dazzled them. Let those blue states complain.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. It's your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman program. Let's go to John in Florida on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom. One question. The Ego Wine Company, a sponsor of yours, and similar companies are precluded from shipping their wine to all 48 states. Some states allow wine to be shipped, some do not.
Yeah, I know.
I read in the newspaper recently that there was a lawsuit that had been filed, and it was going to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Do you know what has that been ruled upon?
It has not. It has not. And the case that John is talking about, for those of you who don't know, is one of the sponsors of this program, the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com on the web, or 1-888-ECO-WINE, can't legally ship wine into the state of Florida, for example. It's a felony. And so people from Florida call and they just say, I'm sorry, I can't take your order. And whereas other states, they can. They ship it to me here in Vermont, for example, which is how I actually first learned about this company. It was years ago. I wanted to get organic wine because grapes are the most heavily pesticide sprayed of all agricultural products. So when you drink regular wine, you're getting a real heavy dose of pesticides. And in any case, there is now this case that has been brought before the Supreme Court, and there are some folks who are opposed to these laws that, you know, like the Organic Wine Company, they want to be able to ship it between states. And then there are others who want to keep the state monopolies on alcohol and other things as well. And it'll be interesting. We're going to see how it plays out. I'm not sure the basis of the challenge. I suspect it's a Commerce Clause case. But I know Veronique, who runs the Organic Wine Company, told me about it. In fact, sent me a news story on it. But I know that it hasn't been decided yet.
Very good. And one last statement. John Kenneth Galbraith, the renowned economist.
Right, who lives just down the road from me.
His most famous statement, and I quote, "The modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness."
Yeah. Yeah.
I have this on my wall framed.
It's a brilliant quote. And you know, and the honest conservatives, the libertarians, the Cato Institute folks, the Ayn Rand folks, they will tell you right up front that they believe that selfishness is the core driving most important human value that needs to be honored, and it's the thing that makes society work. And they really believe it. And therefore, anything that plays off selfishness rather than altruism is good in their minds. And what's really ironic is that very often they quote they quote Darwin, and if you read Origin of the Species or even The Descent of Man, I've read both, but Origin of the Species in particular, survival of the fittest is mentioned twice in Origin of the Species. The word love occurs almost 90 times. The word compassion occurs over 80 times. Cooperation occurs over 100 times. Darwin was very clear that nature is an organism that is interdependent, and is based on interdependence, not dominance. And these cons don't get it. They think it's all about who's in charge. You know, if one organ in your body decides it's in charge, that's called cancer. You know, it's the same thing in nature, and it's the same thing in economics. They're economic cancers.
Thank you very much for answering my question.
Thanks for the call and for the great quote, John. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's 29 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Program here. Integrity and passion in broadcasting truth. You are, in fact, in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire here. No passes. You don't have to be vetted by the RNC. No, all you need to do is listen. 29 minutes past the hour.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most, 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline. How can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Even though Massachusetts recognizes the legality of gay marriages, some employers have refused to extend health benefits to the spouses of gay workers, opting instead to follow guidelines in the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. Signed into law by President Clinton, the act defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman. General Dynamics, FedEx, and Caritas Christi Healthcare are among the companies refusing to grant equal health care coverage. Gay and lesbian advocacy groups plan to challenge the action in court.
More than 170 Newspaper Guild workers are in the fifth week of a strike against The Vindicator, a family-owned newspaper in Youngstown, Ohio. Deborah Shawless Flora of the Youngstown Newspaper Guild told Workers Independent News that four main issues remain unresolved, including wages and health care. The company has given no raises in 4 years, and 2 years ago pressed union workers to begin paying part of their health care premiums for the first time. The Newspaper Guild says at the time, The Vindicator's owner said all company employees would begin paying a portion of their health premiums, but after agreeing to do it, the union discovered that management and non-union workers had separate health plans and did not have to pay any premiums. A strike paper, The Valley Voice, is being published, and it's available at www.valleyvoiceonline.com. It's been 40 years since the Guild last struck the Vindicator, but concessions beginning in 1993 have taken their toll, and the workers feel they need some improvements before signing another two-year contract.
After 6 months on the picket line, 155 SEIU nursing home workers in Pittsburgh will be returning to work today without a contract. Presbyterian Senior Care Nursing Home is reserving the right to declare replacement workers permanent. Talks are set to continue over a wage increase, affordable health insurance, and staffing issues.
The Department of Defense is launching a program intended to help injured soldiers returning home find jobs. The DOD says that nearly 10,000 soldiers have been wounded in Iraq since March of 2003, and that doesn't include psychological trauma often caused by warfare. Only 1 in 10 of the U.S. troops wounded in Iraq has died, the lowest rate of any war in U.S. history. But the limb amputation rate of the Iraq War has been double that of past wars. In addition, 20% of the wounded in Iraq have suffered head and neck injuries that will require lifetime medical care.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Despite 3 years of economic recovery, wage growth is stagnant. That's according to new findings by the Economic Policy Institute, an organization that seeks strategies for a fair economy. According to EPI, hourly earnings fell over 1.3% in the last year and are now at the same level as they were in 2001. EPI says that even though the economy began to add jobs last year, the rate of growth has been too slow to make a difference in the job market, discouraging employers to pass along profits to workers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's just
so the Club for Growth, Stephen Moore used to work for Dick Armey, and the Cato Institute, all these folks are out there putting together these little private side groups to run big PR campaigns. $15 million Club for Growth is trying to raise, and you can bet that some of these investment companies are going to be, shall we say, not reluctant to offer help to convince Americans that we should take our Social Security money away from those boring bureaucrats. They're just boring. It's just terribly boring. All they do is just manage Social Security. It's all they do. They wear green eye shades and they add things up and they don't take big salaries and they don't have corporate jets with gold fixtures in the bathroom and they don't have CEOs who make millions and millions of dollars. And they're not paying dividends to their stockholders. They don't have big corporate headquarters. They don't drive around in limousines. It's boring. We need to replace these people with some folks who really know how to live. Get Donald Trump and his buddies in there. Let them run Social Security. They'll say, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my. Oh, my. Where are we going? Where are we going with this? I'm telling you, it's all about rolling back the New Deal. It's all about rolling back the New Deal. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'd like to tell you an interesting conversation, or tell you about one that I had with a German gentleman that I met at sort of a coffee club in the mall.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go have coffee, and we just start people talk, you know. And
yeah.
But first, I'd like to ask you, I wanted to tell you about what his take of what happened, you know, or the rise of the Nazis and everything, because he lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like you, you know, the truth to me is so interesting in this deceptive world we live in. You know what I'm saying? It almost excites you to get the chance to try to find out what the truth of something is.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely it's fun, it's fascinating, and sometimes it's scary as hell.
Oh yeah, I agree. But first, let me ask you something else, if I may. Is there any truth, do you know, of the story that I've seen it on this one website, and I'd rather not say what website it was, but it said explicitly that Tom Lantos, the Democrat, Mr. Lantos, mm-hmm. was very heavily invested in Hill and Knowlton when they used that baby incubator story against Iraq?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, Armin. I'm familiar.
Can you check into that for me and just let me know? Because, well, I trust you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I don't have like a reporting staff. I'm not the kind of person.
No, but you're very credible, and if you say Armin for, you know,
I'll poke around.
I checked into that. So
I'll poke around.
True or not?
I'll poke around, but I by and large, my sources are probably going to be similar to yours, which is, you know, Googling the thing and whatnot. But well, I'll poke around, see what I can come up with, and I know a couple of people in Washington. I'll ask them about it.
Okay.
In fact, what you might want to do is one of these times when in the second hour of the program at 25 minutes after the hour every day we get a call from the folks at Talk Radio News Service, Ellen Ratner or Victoria Jones, who give us this little 5-minute report from Washington D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And you might want to call just before that. Call it about 16, 17, 18 minutes after the hour and remind me of that. And when they come on, I will ask them. Or for that matter, if you just want to call, you know, 20 after or so, sit through that break. And when we come out of the break, I'll put you on with them if you can do it very quickly, because they've also got to give their report. Ask the question really quick, and then they'll have to do the research. But they're right there in Washington, D.C., and they probably know Tom Lantos. So, you know, maybe we can get an answer
from
that.
Because, you know, I want to know if that's truthful or not.
Yeah, and I understand that. I can't guarantee is that I'll remember to do it. So, if you can.
Well, you know.
I'm getting old, Armin.
Okay. But anyway,
So your friend the German. We got to move it along. I got a couple other calls here to get to.
I understand, but I had a real candid conversation with him, and he had a wife that was nice, and he wheeled her around in a wheelchair.
Mm.
And he was somewhat obviously rigid, you know, the some Germans, and I have some German heritage in me too, and you know that they exhibit. And I called him aside one day as after everybody left, and I says, look, I says, you were there, you know, for God's sakes, in your opinion, what caused the people of Germany at that time period? I mean, you were there and everything. What created the vacuum that drew the people in it,
mm-hmm.
that participated in those terrible things, regardless of the numbers?
And what did he
for
say?
Everybody listening, you know, these
sure.
people say, well, it wasn't 6 million, well, it wasn't five and all this, or regardless of all that, the heinous crimes. You know, what would drive your heart to partake in such horrible crimes against humanity that were taking place over there? And, you know, what motivated you? And he told me, this is what he told me. Now, I'm not saying I believe it, so I don't want to offend anybody, because I have some very good Jewish friends, and I'll fight for them and beside them. And I know some real Christians, too, that don't wear it on their arm. But anyway, he told me that he called them the Jews, and he said what they effectively did was they took over the economic system of Germany.
Yeah, see, that was the big lie. I got to, you know, Armin, that was the big lie that was being promoted, and that was what Hitler was all about. I mean, I'm going to end it there, because I lived in Germany for a year. I've read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich by Schurer. I know people who were in, you know, who lived through that period in time. And the whole disinformation campaign that came out of the Tsar with the Protocols, the Elder of Zion, that was written back around 1910, I believe it was. And there was this campaign to convince people of something that was not true. I mean, it's just. And what's his name the other day? John Stewart. Somebody, you know, after he played that clip from the head of the Catholic League, who went into this rant about how the Jews are running Hollywood and they don't like Christians and blah, blah. And Stewart said, overrepresentation is different from control. And I thought that was just so brilliant. You know, he said if the Jews had controlled Hollywood, then he would be on CBS instead of the Comedy Central or something. He made it, you know, just because people are well represented in industry doesn't mean that they can control it. And certainly there was the Jews did not control Germany or the German economy. It was the history, reality of history just demonstrates that not to be the case. They were scapegoated. And get ready, Armin, because the liberals now are being scapegoated in America. And to some extent, Jews are again being scapegoated in America. Anti-Semitism is again fashionable. And it's just, it ain't right. It ain't right. And it needs to be outed and exposed whenever it happens. Michael in Asheville, North Carolina on the line. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Great to be on the show again. I used to be in Atlanta and was calling from there, and now I'm moved up to lovely Asheville.
Oh, great. Are you listening to us on there's a pirate radio station in Asheville that carries our show there.
Oh, really? Which one? I've been trying to find one and try to get you on the big ones around here. Which one is the one?
No, we're on the air in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, on WED, but I don't think their signal reaches into Asheville. But there's a little pirate station in downtown Asheville that takes our web stream and runs it. So
I'll have to research that.
Yeah. Anyhow, so what's up? I thought maybe you were listening. So what's up?
I wanted to make a comment about the man that called in and called Hitler a leftist and some of the other things you've been talking about.
Oh, the guy from Michigan last hour.
Yeah. I couldn't call in before now, but it just seems to me that a lot of conservatives are suffering from inversion.
Well, there's a campaign to do this.
They really think a positive is a negative and a negative is a positive, and it's because of all this inversive type thinking that's being perpetuated throughout our media.
Yeah, there's a campaign to do this, though, Michael. One of the folks in our chat room made the comment that he thinks that O'Reilly, since he's used the word fascist three times in the last week now to describe liberals and or liberal ideas or whatever, that because people like me are out there on I've written four pieces now on Common Dreams identifying fascism in this administration in the classic sense, the classic Mussolini sense, not saying Bush is Hitler, but just, you know, fascism is here in the United States, and it's growing. And it really never went away if you read Henry Wallace, Roosevelt's vice president. That because there are some of us who are starting to speak out and identify the reality of fascism, which is the merger of corporate and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism, is here. The Reich Wing, these guys on the right, are trying to redefine fascism as something else, and they take the word socialist out of National Socialism and say, see, they were socialists, and Hitler did not have the state control the means of production and distribution, which is the definition of socialism. It was just a word he used.
It's funny because I wonder why he had all those political battles with the socialists.
Yeah, like, he was putting them in prison.
In the 20s, they were his worst enemy. I mean, it's bizarre that they would even say
it
that.
It was the socialists and the communists who first tried to stop him and were the early political enemies of his in the Reichstag and who prevented him in 32 from coming to power. I mean, this is Hitler was no friend of the socialists.
But what's really unfortunate about it is a lot of people, like Bill O'Reilly or someone like that, someone that thinks like that, their first line of defense is to pick something emotional about the topic, and they respond very virulently using emotional language and everything. And the first thing they'll say is, how dare you say that Bush is, fascist? That's all about killing Jews or whatever, And that was what people need to understand is that was just Hitler's little brand of fascism.
Yeah, well, it wasn't, as I've said many times on this program, past the third or fourth year of the Third Reich, it was no longer fascism. It was one man rule. It was a maniacal dictatorship run by an evil madman, a psychopath. And there was a national psychopathy that fell upon the German people, and that's why. And by the way, the same thing was happening in Japan, and that's why. When we conquered Germany and Japan, and this is a really important point, that's why when we conquered Germany and Japan, we did not lose any soldiers in the occupation like we are right now in Iraq. The reason why is because the people of Germany, the average person, the average person on the street, and the same thing in Japan, the average person on the street, after the war, looked around and said, oh my God, what have we done? We have been acting like crazy people. We killed 6 million Jews. We killed these gypsies. We killed the Catholics. We invaded Poland for no reason. The people looked around and they said, this is terrible what we've done. This is horrible. And they woke up from the trance and they were horrified by what had happened and what they had done. And that's why we were able to occupy those countries and be viewed as literally as liberators, not as occupiers, because they got it that they had been helped. They had been awakened from a national psychosis. Whereas when we invaded Iraq, there wasn't, you know, the mass of the people doing horrific things to their neighbors or even to themselves. The mass of the majority of the people in Iraq, I mean, you know, they were afraid of Saddam and they didn't want Uday and Qusay to get near them or their daughters. But by and large, the average person in Iraq just had a decent life, and women didn't have to wear the veil, and people could go about their business, and, you know, their economy was being punished by the sanctions. But they viewed that as us doing that to them, not as Saddam doing that to them. So how these neocons could have ever thought that the Iraqis would view us as liberators and not occupiers is completely beyond me, because Iraq, the average person in Iraq, was not engaged in the middle of a national psychosis. Now, you could argue that the Saudis were, but not the Iraqis.
But that all, to me, just ties in with this Karl Rovian-type inversion that he sells.
Yeah, he's
managed to sell people on these ideas that and make them believe that it's for their benefit, when really it's just the reverse.
Yeah,
and it's that on every single level. And how do we counter that?
Well, we counter it with the truth. There's no other way to do it. Aggressively telling the truth and supporting the organizations that tell the truth. If you like what MediaMatters.org is doing, or what CommonDreams.org is doing, or BuzzFlash.com, or Op-Ed News, or whatever, you know, donate to those sites, buy their products, help them out. If you want to get involved in the political process, which I strongly encourage, join the Green Party, join the Democratic Party, run for dog catcher, get into politics. We need you involved, Michael. We need all of us involved. That's what we have to do, and that's what we have to do to prevent from happening here in America what happened in Germany. John, got to move along. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. And I'm sorry, Michael, it's great to hear from you. John is next, actually. John in Boston, Massachusetts on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind, John?
I just want to thank you again for just a wonderful, wonderful program. Since I started listening to your program about a year ago, I haven't watched regular news other than by accident. You know, when I'm switching to a sports channel on TV.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I might see something like that, and it's just laughable what they're talking about.
Well, it's tragic. It's tragic. We have infotainment. Maybe there's 10 or 15% news, and it has no depth to it. The rest of it's the entertainment stuff.
Exactly. What I wanted to ask, though, Tom, is when the new election takes place, and I say that because it will, because of the what the investigators are uncovering in Ohio and other states, how long do you think it's going to take to elect our new president, around March or April or May? Because we're planning a vacation, and I want to be here when the vote comes.
From your lips to God's ears, John, I hope. I would love to see assuming that it's true. I don't want to see it happen if it's not true. I mean, if the investigations of these things show that there were a few screw-ups here and there that were just, you know, the kind of thing that you have happen when 100 million people vote, and then, you know, I tip my hat to Bush and Robe and say, you guys ran what I think was a terrible campaign, but you know, a good campaign, and you won. But if it turns out, if these investigations show that there were substantial crimes committed, and it sure is looking like there were, and you know, certainly, I mean, the voter suppression stuff is, in my mind, criminal, but I'm not sure that it's legally criminal. But if this stuff shows, then I hope that it just absolutely blows the lid off. I'm not holding my breath, though. I'm not holding my breath.
Well, thanks a lot, Tom, for an excellent program.
Thank you, John. Okay. I think I got to say, John, before you go, the biggest problem I think we all have right now is the cowardice, the institutional cowardice in the Democratic Party.
Right.
We need to get inside that party and get them energized, and we need to be poking them and saying, you know, find a senator who's going to challenge this. Yell at Terry McAuliffe. Get him active. John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
I'm with you.
Yeah, great. Good to know. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxin Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by.
And welcome back.
I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do?
And you know what they're really saying.
They're really saying, I love you.
What a wonderful life. It is such a beautiful life. It is. Life is such a gift. What an extraordinary world we live in. I'm sitting here up in the People's Republic of Vermont, looking out on a gray, snowy day, and it is just so good to be alive. Welcome back to the Tom Hartmann Radio Program, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. Let's go to Will in Alma, Michigan. Hey, Will, welcome to the program.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Will. My wife's grandmother had a farm just outside of Alma, Michigan, in Gratiot County. Louise spent much of her childhood there. So
I'll be darned. Well, she was a lucky woman.
An echo from our past. Yeah, she just came in and commented on it. So what's up?
Well, I've been interested in your conversations today, especially hearing about people calling other people fascists.
Yeah.
And it's a disturbing thing, but it kind of falls into a pattern that I think the right-wing media follows, and that is they find their own faults, and then they, using the best defense is a good offense kind of a philosophy, they accuse their opponents of having those faults.
Yeah, the classic example is class warfare. You know, accusing liberals of class warfare because they dare mention the fact that, as Warren Buffett said, there is class warfare and my class is winning, he being the second richest man in America. And, you're absolutely right. And it's something that the Germans were very good at, Mussolini was very good at, Stalin was very good at, and this crew is very good at. And it's been done on the left as well. It's been done on the left and the right.
But not with the same level of vociferousness, I don't think.
Yeah, or effectiveness,
exactly.
Or competence. I mean, that's one of the things that is really startling, is how competent these guys are at just flipping topics, just flipping public perception around so that up becomes down, black becomes white, left becomes right. And you know, the fact that Bill O'Reilly is calling people fascists, you know, when the definition of fascism is the merging of corporate and state interests, and he's just, I mean, it's just, it is absolutely bizarre. Will, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We've got to wrap up the show here. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Shelby wants me to let you know, by the way, if you're listening to our program on radiopower.org, she's going to maintain the stream. I'm going to be doing the filling in for Randy Rhodes, doing the Randy Rhodes Show on Air America Radio for the next 4 hours. And I think that Shelby's going to carry at least the first hour, so stick around. Thanks to Louise for producing our program here today, to Ira Gravatt for engineering it, to Brad Walrod in New York for our music, to our sponsors, the folks in our chat room who showed up. Great to see you all. Stick around. We'll still be on for a little while. And to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Check our website at www.tomhartmann.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Tom Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartmann Program.